So I'm Rob Hopkins from Transition Network, and I'm the chair for this workshop today. And what we really were wanting to explore here is how transition should be reinterpreting and representing and reimagining itself in the context of the very rapidly unraveling European and further afield debt crisis, and what that should look like. So transition started originally as an experiment, and it still is an experiment, that idea that none of us individually knows what we do now, that actually by being part of an experiment and everybody contributing and chipping in, then we can figure out a way forward through these times. And I suppose initially, when we started doing transition, there was still economic growth happening. We were still in the kind of the Celtic Tiger in Ireland. You know, there was still the sort of the debt party was still just about happening. And that's no longer the case. And when we started, I suppose, you know, the idea of the economic impacts of what we're doing now felt somewhat further afield. But now we're very much entering into those times. And a while ago, I had a discussion some of you may have seen on the website with Richard Heinberg about collapse and whether we should be preparing for things unraveling very quickly or more gently and what that looks like, and the extent to which we were talking about the US then, where initially, you know, the response to peak oil tended to be more of a kind of survivalist kind of panic mode. And one of the things that was teased out in that was about safety nets and support nets, and the extent to which in some countries you feel that if you start to fall, there's something to catch you, and in other places you just keep on falling. So it felt like, certainly with the feedback coming from transition groups in Spain and Portugal and Italy and Greece, and how they are, the model by which transition has been done here, which is maybe you start a group and you show some films and you charge people to come along to the films, and then maybe you have a membership and set up, and maybe people give you a little bit of money every month to sustain the transition group, and maybe you get some copies of books and DVDs that Transition Network have produced, and then you sell them at your events, and maybe that makes a little bit of money. Really wasn't working in Spain and Portugal and places where this situation was much, much more acute. And also in places where Naomi Klein's idea of the shock doctrine about the shock being used as the opportunity to make all kinds of changes that otherwise really wouldn't have been acceptable when people are in that kind of paralyzed state seems to be really what's happening in many places now. So we thought it would be really important to make a space at this event to focus on what transition is looking like as it emerges in these different places, in these different contexts. Also very much aware of that it's not the case that in Portugal it's all like this, and in the UK it's all like this, because there are many communities in the UK which are in a very similar situation as some places in Spain, and also in Spain and Portugal there are some places where it's still not so bad necessarily, and there are communities who are still stronger. So we want to look really at what this means for transition. And what we're going to do as the workshop goes on, there's a couple of times we're going to get you into groups to discuss this. But we wanted to start out by hearing voices from Spain and from Portugal, who are going to give a taste, firstly, of how things are there now, and also how transition is emerging in that context, what transition looks like as it starts to emerge. So I want to first of all invite Philippa Pimentel, who many of you will know, who is coordinating the International Transition Hubs for Transition Network, does some work in Brussels, working around the EU and stuff, but also is very active in transition in Portugal. So Philippa, thank you very much.
Good morning. The idea is that I tell you about Portugal and to tell you more or less what is going on there. And it's a bit shocking, But the most what I want is to tell you how hope, the hope I have, and how we are trying to work for that. So we hear a lot about Greece, and but I tell you that in Portugal we are struggling as well. And I just want you to tell you that the minimum wage in Portugal is around 450 euros per month. And there is a study that says that the supermarket prices are at the same level as UK. And there have been a lot of cuts of helps, of all the subsidies, and government with these plans is getting all the taxes it can with companies that are closing down every day. And what I feel, I don't live in Portugal, but I go there often for family. Every time I go back, I have this feeling of deep depression and lack of hope. And in my initiative, that is Porto Alegre, I have here another fellow of Porto Alegre, is of a deep sadness. And the last time I've done a real temperature check with local producers in a local market, in the last question was, do you have hope? And the lady answered me, I'm just waiting to die. So it's deep depression. And another thing that I really feel that's important to say is that groups that are trying to experiment and to do something about transition, of course we cannot lead the normal guidelines of selling movies or just do an exhibition and you collect stuff. It's really very difficult because the people I want to get in my group are these people that don't have money to eat, right? So of course I cannot ask them that. So for me the very important is how do we, in my initiative, how do I transform this idea, the incredible idea of transition, and adapt it to a situation like that. Another thing that is important is we had a member of the Economic and Social Committee in Europe, in Brussels, that came to my initiative, and she did the comparison between the people that are working already with us and the people that are not. And she says that in her report that there is a huge difference on this question, do you have hope? And I think this is a major thing. And so there is hope for transition. But I feel sometimes that we need support, mainly for the group itself, because this depression gets into the members of the group. And then when you start to think that maybe you will not have a job next month, what is priority? It's really difficult. So you need some kind of psychological support or whatever is the support you need. It's very, very deep, but I'm full of hope. So I would like to hear the ideas of this group, whatever it is, to share experience and resources. Or if how can we help sharing what we learn with our experiment for you to prepare for a similar situation? And I think that this sharing is the real secret and treasure transition has. So, and I have stories of my own initiative. If you want to know more, we have all a work program. So I'm there to answer your questions.
And Juan del Rio is from Barcelona, and he's one of the leaders of the emergent transition movement in Spain, and has been an environmental educator for some time. Juan?
Thank you, Rob. Well, thanks to everyone to be here. And I have to say that it was quite emotional to listen to Felipa, because in Spain it's quite the same, I think. Just few data for you to know. In 2007, before the crisis started, we had a 9% of unemployment. Now we have a 25%. And about 53% of unemployment for young people below 25. Since the beginning of the crisis, about 200,000 evictions happened, so people are losing their own homes. And ironically, in Spain we have 6 million houses totally empty. 6 million houses, yeah. At the same time, we are suffering huge cuts in health, in education, in working rights, in salaries, etc. And all this money is to pay the banks that they are taking our houses. And the debt of Spain, the 80% of the debt, is private debt, which mostly is from the banks and the big corporations. So this means that we are the debt of those corporations. And so they are stealing to us from everywhere. And I know this is happening in many places, but the situation in Spain now is very urgent. Okay. Of course, as in Portugal, Greece, and other places, there's a feeling of despair, fear to the change. And in fact, in Spain, we are degrowing now. This is a reality. We are degrowing. But it's not a conscient degrowth. It's a degrowth that means a growth in inequality, in poverty, in social stress, etc. And as Felipa said, we are living this, experiencing this also in the groups. But of course, this is part of the old paradigm that sees this crisis as a huge problem. But there's many other things that are happening, understanding that all this is also a huge opportunity to change, even though this is happening with urgency and a huge lack of resources, economical resources, and many others. The transition is happening in many different ways. There's a lot of different projects going on and appearing a little bit everywhere. I could say in a quite chaotic way that I hope is going to become more organical. But a lot of people is going back to the land or to produce food or also inside cities. A lot of people is trying to organize themselves in a more cooperative and collective way. Just in Barcelona, to explain you a little bit, we have about 60 consumer groups. A lot of them are prosumer groups. This means that there's people that are producing and at the same time consuming. Well, many things are happening. The degrowth movement, that it has also a more political approach, is quite strong in Spain, and something that is happening with the transition movement is that in few places we are like taking, not in Barcelona exactly, but we are like taking the ideas from one and the other and to put it together. And well, I don't know. People need solutions, and yeah, they have hope for transition. But they don't really know exactly how to do it, and I'm very happy to be here and to share with you all this that is happening there, and trying to also take a bit from your ideas and experiences and to take it back home, you know? And just something else, because of the lack of economical resources, the gift economy is taking really, really a lot of strength. Even though, of course, it's cohabiting with re-economy in the big cities, mainly, like in Barcelona, where I'm living, but the gift economy is taking a lot of strength. Just in Catalonia, the area I'm living, I know 4 different social currencies, for example. And there's a lot of interchange networks that they are starting. And the point is that we, as transition initiatives, that we are more or less about 25 right now in Spain, we need to work with this kind of economical way of doing the things, because if not, I mean, we don't have money to do the things. We have to be creative and invent new ways, no? And we have the problem definitely that inside the groups, we have to at the same time to look for jobs to live and etc. There's nobody is paid for transition in Spain. Absolutely anyone, just to let you know, for example. Well, so that's it. But things, I'm hopeful with the things. Okay, so it will be good.
Thank you. So hopefully that's given us a flavour of how things are emerging there and what transition is looking like in that context. So what we wanted to do now is to get you into some groups. Well, unless actually, does anybody have any questions for Juan and Felipe, of things that you're still wondering after what they've said?
Yes, I take a lot of inspiration from Brazil, what Isa and the others are doing. But we have a rule in my... I prefer to talk about my initiative, but there are other people from Portugal. We have a network of friends, really like a family, in Portugal doing transition to several initiatives, and we are very, very conscient that we need to be together, because one, we started an experiment, and when it works, we all continue that, you know? We start one thing, and sometimes it's really, really basic, like now all the workshops my initiative does is sharing, so no money involved. So everyone comes, but we share everything. So even for example, we did workshop that you would register and you would say if you want just to learn or just you have a recipe as well. If you have a recipe, you give us the recipe. In the end, we put a list of ingredients and we use Doodle, like for the dates, but instead of the dates, we put the ingredients. And when you, in the end, just some days before, we send a list to the participants and they tick what they are going to take. So, like this, if you have a garden, you take the ingredient that you have in your garden, or you buy to a local shop, but it's a completely stupid, well, not stupid, but it's not as intelligent to give us the list to us that we go to a supermarket and buy, and then we ask money to the people, you see? So this kind of creative stuff, one person in Sintra, we did a huge event. You were there. Mandy was there, was the trainer. We tried a huge thing with 75 people. In the end, we were like 100. And we organized a full weekend without money. So everyone came and all the food was like that. It was shared. So every time I do an initiative an activity, I follow that experience. I use a lot, or we use a lot, the other initiatives and what Totnes is doing, what people are doing. Of course, we do that. But the activities themselves, we try to give the community the initiative, you see? Not us. So we are creative on how to organize it.
Well, Well, of course, we see to other places to look for examples, but we have to take into account that this crisis is happening like very fast, you know. So at the same time that things are happening in other places, also, you just have to be quick to find how to do it, no? And I was also in that workshop, and I have to say that we have done workshops in Spain following the same way to do it. So yeah, of course we have to look to the others. And in fact, one of the key points for me of being here is to hear from you. You know, and everyone to cooperate among ourselves. That's basic. And something that is happening, and I guess is happening to here in Spain, is that because all these groups are emerging everywhere, not just called transition or doesn't matter the name, okay? One of the key roles I really hope the transition movement could do in Spain and everywhere is like to bridge, to build bridges among those islands, you know, among those projects and ideas, because we tend to see the differences as distance and not as a diversity and a creation. And this is, I think, this is part of a key change to the new paradigm of doing the things. Yeah.
Thank you. So, I was, okay.
About 10 years ago, Argentina went through a major collapse. And one of the interesting things that happened there was fairly spontaneous development of local exchanges, gift economy and local currencies, and there were sort of toolkits circulated. Have people been talking about anything like that you know of? And if not, could we as a movement support that sort of thing?
Can you ask?
I think this is a good question. I think we are here exactly to discuss that. And I would love to see these ideas come from the discussions we are inviting people to have in groups.
Well, speaking of the discussions we want people to have in groups, we're going to move on to the first one of those. So what we wanted to do was, for this, would be to get people into groups with people. So if people feel that they live in a place which is already experiencing the kind of economic turbulence, the kind of economic difficulties that Juan and Felipe have been talking about, could you raise your hand? Okay. So if you could form a group with the other people with their hands up. So we'll have a group of those people. So make sure you all can see each other. Put your hands up again. Okay. And then if we can form groups of kind of four or five people. And the question we'd like you to think about is, what should transition look like in your context? And what would the perfect support from Transition Network look like? So I'll say that again. So what should transition look like in your context? And what would the perfect support from Transition Network look like? Yes. Yeah. No, in your own situation, yeah. So what we're hoping to kind of be able to tease out is the difference in sort of how it will look different in those different contexts. Okay? For about 10, 15 minutes, and then we'll come back and feedback the key things that you've thought. Yes. Yeah, actually, I should clarify. Yeah, so in the situation that you're in now, with an understanding that we're kind of moving towards, you know, so those of us who are doing transition here, for example, where it's maybe we're not in the same situation yet, but there is a sense that we are moving in that direction. So, what should transition look like where we are to be best prepared for that, and what support could Transition Network offer to enable that? Okay, 4 or 5 people, 10, 15 minutes, off we go. Thank you. Okay, can we have you back again, please? One more minute, okay. Okay, can I ask you to draw your discussion to a halt? Oh, that's the way, isn't it? I forgot about that. Fantastic. The power of the raised hand. So we've got a little bit of time to hear what were the sort of summaries of any of the high points of your discussion. Are there any group who'd like to start us off? Maybe Davey?
Our group was made up of a number of countries in crisis: Spain, Ireland, Greece, Israel, Latvia, Portugal, Philippines. So it was quite a mixed group. We really looked at being transition needs to be relevant. We need, as Gary was saying earlier, toolkits to do things like livelihoods, setting up CSAs or other food and agriculture systems, energy systems, housing. How do we do that? Low debt, no debt. We need to build our self-reliance of our communities, and we need to work with the top-down as well as the bottom-up. We need the top-down to enable the bottom-up solutions to happen. We did look at how unrelevant showing peak oil movies is at these times in these countries, and that really it's about now livelihoods, as you've been saying. Really, how do we create jobs and livelihoods within this movement? So I think the message to Transition Network is, or to the transition movement, is we need to build toolkits. We need to build how to projects, how to do things like making it relevant in our communities to be more resilient.
Thank you. And I'm actually going to mention something that just came to me now. We didn't actually talk about it in my group, but I've mentioned it to Philippa before, and maybe Juan as well. Twinning. A very ancient idea, nothing new about it. However, I did some years ago twinning between environmental groups in Eastern Europe and in Western Europe, and I just launched a thing and let them get on with it, you know, twin groups. It was absolutely amazing what they could do to help each other. One example was the women in Chernobyl and their children that suffered from the after effects of the explosion, and they sent doctors from London to over there to help them. Now, I think in the situation that we have with countries like yours, I think that the twinning idea is a very simple idea, but it's also an idea where we can fire off ideas for each other and work together across the borders. Thank you.
Okay, something that came up in our conversation quite strongly was the role of transition initiatives as catalysts for networking in their communities. So it's kind of providing an approachable open forum for your community to network and create a network of localized support that's responsive to your local situation. And the other thing that was came up quite strongly was coming up with specific ideas that shift people's perception of what's possible, particularly around people's perception of exchange and money. So there was an idea from Totnes about an offering stall where people were offering tea and cakes, and people would come up and say, oh, can I have some of that? And they say, yeah, that's fine, just take it. But what can you offer in exchange? You know, can you offer to tell a story? Can you offer to do some other thing in the community? And it just, those kinds of ideas, like local currency, like swaps, free cycle, that, you know, more of those ideas that just help to free people? Because it seemed to me with Philippa, this thing about the depression is like, if I can't get my needs met, if I can't meet them, I feel depressed and despairing. If I can find a way to meet those needs, if it's in a different way, then that lifts that depression and gives you hope. Thank you.
So we had many different countries at our table: Wales, Belgium, Germany, and London and Paris. And one of our key conclusions was that when the work of Joanna Macy or similar work is introduced in our initiatives, it seems to make a difference. So one of our requests for the network would be actually to help us all get more of this emotional process stuff into our initiatives. It seems really to make a difference. And then two more suggestions for the network. One is that we create something called the ATs, the Anonymous Transitional Groups, so we can all meet, wear rubber masks with your face maybe before, so we don't know who we are each other, and talk freely about our transition problems. Suggestion number one. And suggestion number two is a 24/7 helpline from the network to call you and get transition advice. Yes, Rob. Thank you.
I'm not sure about that one. You'll have to negotiate that one with my wife.
What we talked about on this table, what I talked about, I'm not going, again, I'm going to talk about my perception of what was going on. If you see as a resource, as a wealth, the three things that you talked about here, urgency, hope, and sharing, it turns out that you're very rich in those things. And it's we, I live in Highgate, those three resources are impoverished in Highgate. So the situation is reversed. So what if we're looking for needs from the transition network support, we need some support for urgency, hope, and sharing.
The particular statement that I liked from our discussion was from Liliana, saying the big shift needed is people realizing that they have to help themselves. They can't expect the solutions to be found for them.
What we talked about was, I think that if I'm okay to say, sorry, is creating a money descent plan in the same way that we thought it was going to be the energy on the peak oil descent. But actually, the transition network creating a system, a similar program process that we are actually going to look at money descent. And not that we're going to start to live without money, but we're going to help people to imagine that they could live with much less money and create parallel systems where we can teach experience what it's like to exchange other things than money. And to be able to do that, we also thought that we have to walk through the fear. We have to acknowledge how terrified everybody is. And then if we walk through the fear, and then I'm a great fan of Joanna Macy as well and her book on active hope, but then we can look at the excitement, because it is, we also said, and you know, that it is the most exciting times somehow. We need to keep that going, and that it's really the best opportunity we've ever had to change the world and to embrace that. Is that right? Yeah?
Thank you. Since the idea of a money just descent plan is, we Transition Network held a day a little while ago that was called Peak Money. That wasn't that idea of peak money. It was very interesting, the discussions around that. Well, is there such a thing? Can you do peak money? Is it not? But it's quite an interesting kind of thought-provoking idea, really. Well, maybe just take a couple more, and then we'll move on to the next bit.
I'd just like to sort of resonate with the sort of the idea of providing hope. And I think that we didn't talk about it much, but we sort of identified cultural differences in France and UK at our table. And I think definitely creating communication messages that resonate with your cultural norms or your are really important. And what's relevant in France will be slightly different communication to other countries as well. One of the lines that sort of resonated me to, from somebody called Paul Hawken was he came up with a line which is the world is hiring, the earth is hiring. And this idea of unemployment being very sort of, you know, prominent in lots of the countries that are facing problems right now is that the earth is hiring you as well. This idea of creating employment to create a better earth could be something that could inspire hope in different places. So maybe help on what those communication opportunities would be in your cultures or our cultures would be really helpful.
Just a really quick point about the idea that the, you know, you've got the struggling countries and the non-struggling countries. I know you did say that was a simplification, but I think we, even within like a small place like the area in London I live in, we've got people who are quite affluent and we've got people who already are experiencing what they're experiencing in Spain and in Portugal and, you know, with the cuts coming in more and more. And it's a challenge for our groups to sort of look in our communities in a sensitive and responsive way and see how we can meet that. Right where we are right now as well. Thank you.
And finally.
Hi, when we started our discussion, I said that I'm here to learn a lot about the economy, but I've got a worry that that we have a two-way choice here, that there's gift economy, gift economists, and on the other hand, we've got re-economy and re-economists. And they're really two different directions. In the gift economy, you're interested in trust and the community that you build and words like love and things come into it. Whereas in the re-economy world, it's more grown up, it's more accurate, it's impartial. Things are written down, the amount of money you have, whether it's an alternative currency or a real one. An alternative or a... official, I don't know. That it's all written down and accurate, and it's to the penny, and you can rely on it. And I was a bit rude, and I said I sometimes feel I've been told off, and people tell me, well, you don't understand. I have a mortgage. I have children. You know, it's different for me. We talked about is it both? We have both. Obviously, we have use everything we can, but I still feel we have this distinction, and it's two possible directions. And it's two possible motivations. We had some talk in our transition group a year ago about how much heart and soul work do we need? Do we need a lot more or a little bit more or what? And one of the crucial distinctions that came out for me out of that discussion was if we imagine a world in which you have, you know, your permaculture garden with all its self-sufficiency features built into it, but... you know, maybe it's in America, maybe it's surrounded by an 8-foot fence and everybody has got guns in order to defend it from the people who didn't build a permaculture garden in time before the economy collapsed. And if that is a possible future scenario, then should we be starting and encouraging a meditation group towards the gift economy direction? Or should we be actually teaching people to shoot and starting a rifle club?
On that bombshell. Well, that actually sets up perfectly, not the gun bit, but the bit before about re-economy and gift economy is the next thing we want to go on to explore. But first of all, there was a little interesting discussion that was going on while you were having your interesting discussions that I just wanted to get these guys to comment on, which was we were talking about that sometimes there's an assumption that actually when things get very difficult economically in a community, peak oil and climate change, you don't bother with those anymore. You just focus on economics as the driver. And there was some quite interesting discussion here that I just wanted to get these guys to pick up on before we move on. Philippa?
I've been hearing a lot of that. That, well, now it's crisis, so we don't use the argument of climate change. And I tell you, it's not true. So I tell you why. My experience is that keep your options all open, because the most interesting conversations about what climate change is, how climate change is happening, is with very old people around our vegetable garden, urban vegetable garden, sit down with me and talk about how do you see what nature is doing to us? Because in rural places, and mainly in southern countries, people have a very, very close relationship with the land, and they read the signs. And they know that's changing. And so it's not true. It's not true. Careful, open your eyes. And before you say something and you choose your strategy or your words, you listen to people.
Well, on the other hand, I have to say that I live in a city, in Barcelona. And, well, here we can speak about climate change, yes, but because the people is not really connected with nature, they don't even listen to the birds every day, so they don't know if they are staying or not. If they go to Africa, they are migrating, etc. So I totally agree with Filipa. We have to take care with which are our arguments to decide. And I have to say that I really love the idea of the Zen money the Zen plan. It was lovely and great. Yeah.
Thank you. So what we want to do is for the second conversation with you is to mix up the groups a bit, maybe get together with some people you weren't with before. And as our friend here was saying, we want to really explore how these two things sit alongside each other. So the Reconomy idea, the idea that we actively and intentionally try to re-stimulate the economy where we live based on transition ideas, that we see our local economy as being like a leaky bucket, and that each of those leaks is a potential livelihood, potential business, potential reskilling, that actually when we're serious about economic localization as an idea, that we decide to make that happen and decide to pick up some of those key things and manifest them. And at the same time, the other idea that's been coming through very strongly is the idea of a gift economy. And on first glance, they seem like things that maybe don't sit alongside each other. They seem like quite different ideas. And that tension that you pointed out is a thing that we'd like you to look at in the groups. So how do those two things sit alongside each other? How might those things sit alongside each other in the place that you live? Yeah. Okay. Who would consider themselves? Do you want to talk about, how would you describe a gift economy in the way that you practice it?
For me, the gift economy is, for me, it's still, I'm still exploring it. This is my perspective of it, is how do you reduce your exchanges in a moment that you have something that someone needs and you just give it. And what you want back is nothing. It's just the happiness of having done that. So, and for me, the big benefit of that, this is the short way for community building. So that this thing of, you see much more now, nowadays, you say, I will pay you because I don't want to owe you. This owe you, what you don't want to owe, is a connection and a string between you and me, that I will be with you if you need me, and because when I needed, you were there. So, and this is the concept of family that you can take to a community. So for me, it's that. So how do you reduce the exchange of money, meeting your needs, and then to keep only what's really necessary to exchange or to pay for. So this is how I see it.
So I guess one way to think about it might be, so for example, if you're looking at healthcare in your local economy, you know, at the moment there's a huge amount of money that is spent on healthcare, and at the moment a lot of it is spent through big corporations, and that money pours out of the community. So one thing, when I did an interview with Charles Eisenstein, he was saying, you know, those things like looking after children, looking after relatives who aren't well or something, that's something which was always done in a gift economy. There was, so it was done informally. Now it's become something that's done for us. So actually, I suppose the re-economy approach would be to say we need to set up a community-owned organization, a care business, which is about generating employment for people. Maybe it's a cooperative, it's owned by its members, it's doing that work, but it's operating within a money economy, trying to keep that money local, sourcing food from local suppliers, sourcing local services, maybe using local currency. A gift economy might say, oh, actually, we need to do it in a different way, where we work out a way where we support each other and we bring people together in that situation to support each other. Is that a good sort of way of looking at the differences? Okay, sorry. So maybe a re-economy approach would be to say that we need to set up a social enterprise to offer care for each other's children, and we create jobs, and it's a cooperative maybe, and people buy shares in it, community-owned, supports local food businesses, that kind of thing, would be a re-economy approach. A gift economy approach would be more, we have a more of an informal arrangement, and we look after each other's children, and we have, you know, we operate as a gift economy in that sense.
I think the essence of it is that with money, even local currencies or barter, I won't do something for you unless I get something, the money, the barter, whatever it is, in exchange immediately. That's the thing. We're in the gift economy. There's an ongoing relationship. People give and receive, but they don't necessarily get it back for each thing they did. So I'll give, do you a favor today, and you'll do someone else a favor tomorrow, or whatever.
Okay, last one, and then we will move into...
I just wanted to stress also the aspect of the needs in the gift economy, and that it's about meeting your true needs. And we all need to learn what our true needs are, because at the moment, what we think our true needs are is what we've learned in our current society. So there is an element of a process we all have to go through before we can do that. And I just wanted to point that out.
No iPads then. Okay, one for Gerd. Okay. No, it's good. It's good exercise. It's good keeping me fit.
You were speaking about the gift economy and of sharing and looking after children and elderly people in this gift economy. But the problems that could possibly arise from what I see are the fact that you would then come up against legislation. You have to have people who care for children and elderly people who actually know what they're doing. So it's not just a question of having your neighbor or your friend or even your family members taking on these responsibilities without the thorough knowledge and understanding of the job, the responsibilities, health and safety aspects, and living within the law. Now, we come up against governments, local authorities, and I feel myself that while these things are very good in theory, I really feel that in practice there are going to be a great many hurdles. Thank you.
Okay, so that's the question. What would the balance of these two approaches look like in the place that you live? And we've again sort of 12 minutes possibly. And it would be nice maybe to mix the groups up a bit. And and we'll come back and see how it went afterwards. Thank you very much. Okay, just one more minute, please. Okay, if I could ask you to bring your attention back, please. So we've had a very wide-ranging morning. And clearly we've only just able to start really opening up a discussion about these things. We're not planning to have come up with a kind of a firm action plan or anything from this discussion. But hopefully it's one that, that will continue through the conference and beyond the conference. So we have about 5 minutes left before we have to move on to lunch.
Oh.
Are you not hungry? No. Well, we could go on for a fight. I don't know. Do people want? I mean, is everyone absolutely starving and desperate to rush off? And is the food there even? Could you have a look at? Could somebody just have a look and see if there's any food? It's just being put out. Okay, so if we went over by 5 minutes, would that put anybody out? Oh, okay. Well, we'll keep watching. We'll keep watching. If it looks like your dinner is in any danger, we'll gift it to them. Absolutely, yeah. So, would anybody like to share anything that came up in your discussions there, Jan?
I have a picture in my head about what we're talking about. There is a piece of land where we are now with a lot of problems. And then there is a wall, really thick wall. And on the other side, there is the alternative. So what we need to do is to open windows and doors and try to see what's in these windows and doors and explore them. And share the experiences. So for the network, I think, is to encourage people to do a lot of things and follow them and just distribute things to others. And for instance, in Sweden, where I live, no newspapers write anything about the situation in Spain and Portugal. So it's a really lack of information for us in that aspect. And now there is a journalist, a friend of mine, he's traveling from Greece to Italy, to Spain, to Portugal, just to bring. But this newspaper is just a tiny little one in Sweden. So we're out of this, not we in transition, of course, but we need to forward this information, what's happening, and the kind of solution, as you said, we got to have the examples and to see what's inside them and try to explore them in many ways.
Thank you.
There was an interesting observation at this table, which is that a lot of people are trapped in the money economy by their debt, particularly by mortgages. And so there's a need to be able to service those debts and have money to pay those debts somehow, be it with the economy or some other way of resolving that situation. And with the gift economy, it came back to me again that actually having a gift economy requires a network of trust, and creating a gift economy creates the network of trust. So there's something in there again about networks.
Thank you.
Hi there. We've got a mix of people from Brazil and Totnes and Belgium and Wales, Sweden as well. I guess there's different ranges of perspective, because we've got people in the favelas who haven't even had what we have got and haven't even come down the other side yet. And then there's people who are at the top, like where I live in Cowbridge. It's probably one of the remaining truly wealthy areas in Wales, I guess. And then there's the people on the other side who are coming down the bottom. But so we sort of said, how does everyone sort of continue to be inspired if there's so many different levels of or stages? And I think one person said, throw the TV out the window. And actually, I thought, well, actually, maybe there's an aspect of actually having to look into transition and how much you can get from life, introvert, bringing transition from within. But also, how about something like a visionary transition channel, like a transition TV, which maybe a lot of transition people don't actually watch the TV, but a lot of people that who are who are at the top, bottom, or in the middle, who aren't in transition, who maybe want to see the visions and see how it can create more of a better life by looking at re-economy and free economy. And that was
looking for.
TTTV. Yeah, you don't want to throw the TV out of the window. You can give it to someone, if nothing else. Thank you.
Something that was being talked about earlier on the table I was on over there, I wanted to mention a lot of our initiatives in UK transition groups tend to be viewed as middle-class hobbies, and perhaps they are, local food, local energy things. And one of the lessons we can learn from Portugal and Spain and Greece, I think, is how we might transition from those hobbies into realities. The fact that in the future our local food initiatives will become essential. They won't be a middle-class hobby. They'll be sustaining our communities. And we will have to make a transition from a hobby to an essential. And I think it's an interesting area that by looking at how they deal with these things in Portugal, we might inform our own initiatives and our projects, because moving from a hobby to an essential, you know, could be quite a challenge, and our own perceptions of it.
I just had a thought. There's a small country in Europe who did not go for the global finances, and that's Iceland. And I've got some friends who are from Iceland, and there's really some exciting things happening in Iceland, and we don't know anything about it. And is there anybody from Iceland at this conference? Do they have a transition movement? And maybe we need to find out what they're doing, because they're doing it, and bizarrely, their economy is growing, whatever that means, which is making the British very cross. But they decided not to go with the IMF, Monetary Fund, and step out of Europe altogether. And they are now rewriting their own constitution, like the people are rewriting the constitution, which is an astonishing idea. And they actually said, no, we will not bail out the banks. And they put their bankers on trial. And they are the only country in the world, as far as I know, that's done that. And the monetary funds went, oh, okay. And that was that.
Just looking at the re-economy or gift economy in our group here, which is very much a men's group here, we looked at that it isn't an either or, it's a question of scale, and that with the gift economy, you really need to have trust and strong relationships, and that's not going to work on a regional or national scale. And also that the re-economy and building social enterprises, you could have social enterprises, or you can and do have social enterprises that facilitate sharing, almost facilitate gifting, but they're social enterprises. I know I am in a very tight community in Ireland. We have 60 families, our own farm. That farm is a blend of gifting and enterprise. We're a social enterprise, but we employ 3 farmers, and they get a livelihood for farming, for providing our needs in food. So it's we can blend these things, and we can think about scale, I think, is really important. We have a nice term I introduced here called ROSCI, Return on Social Capital Invested, which is like our gift economy. If you do a lot for your neighbors without needing it to be reciprocated, when you need something done, there is a lot of people there to help you do it. So it's all about strengthening our social capital and not just thinking about demonetizing.
I'm in a unique position because, well, I don't know if it's unique, but it's interesting because I used to live in Barcelona and I was part of the group that set up Barcelona Transition Town, where Juan comes from. And now I'm living in Sweden, which is completely at the other end of the economic scale. And the people of Sweden, no offence, but seem to be living in a sort of extraordinary economic bubble of complete unreality, I think, removed from the rest of our experiences. So I think perhaps and I come from England, so I kind of have different feet in different places, but I think that on reflection, it seems to me that if you already quite low down, economically speaking, perhaps you don't have so far to fall when the shit hits the fan. But maybe if you're up here, economically speaking, it's going to be a long way down. So if you do come from a poor country, it's not maybe that bad because you're already dealing with things in a much more resilient way. So perhaps, I don't know, I'm just trying to see the positive in something that looks negative. So...
Maybe we'll take one more from Paul, and then we'll ask Juan and Felipe for some closing thoughts.
Okay, well, maybe a closing thought of me too. I'd like to take back the twinning idea, because we heard in several occasions that there's need for concrete examples of what's really happening or what's on the doorstep of the richer countries. So... learning from what's happening in Southern Europe, for instance, can be very, very helpful. So maybe transition groups can start a twinning and create together a money descent action plan. So both sides can benefit and see it be tested in practice as well. And then to build in there... Well, to start with, and that was discussed here at the table too, was start with thinking of what are your real needs. So that boils down to food, clothing, shelter to start with, and build up from there on. I think that's quite key.
Just been told that there's maybe 10 minutes till lunch arrives, so we could take a few more thoughts.
I'm rebounding on two comments. One was about Iceland, and I'm going to relate it to Greece. And what I've noticed is that some stories I've heard from in Iceland were that actually the people, you know, were mostly kind of poor farmers, or they raised sheep or whatever, and they got into this huge banking and, you know, modern lifestyle really quite recently. So the less time that a culture has moved away from their roots, if you will, then the more they remember. And a friend of my brother's, who is maybe mid-40s, when he was young, he was working on a farm wearing completely wool underwear and the whole Icelandic tradition clothing. And so I heard people say, well, you know, people are realizing they can't afford this new modern lifestyle, and they're going back to how they used to live and simplifying. And it's easier for them. And so when I see people in Greece that are not in the urban context where they've kind of lost their skills, but even if they did lose their skills, their older parents and aunts and uncles haven't died off yet, so they can still learn from them. So I think it's good to maybe help in when we want to reach out or have toolkits to have people look at the positive and say, look, there are a lot of people that are doing stuff, and it helps people feel like they're joining a movement where there's a lot of people, not that they're off by themselves, and help that connection.
Wool and underwear, anyone?
Yeah. All right. The previous speaker was talking about our real needs. And I just wanted to ask Philippa, when you have your large meetings, do you sing? Do you have any music of any kind?
We'll be coming to Philippa again in a minute for some closing. Any last things anyone would like to say? Yes.
We had a question at this table. Are there any examples of successful gift economies? And I just want to sort of things like free cycle and the couch surfing movement, woofing. There's loads of new ways that gift economies are starting to emerge and spontaneously as well. So these sorts of, the idea of couch surfing, I don't know whether anyone's couch surfing this weekend. Anyone couch surfing this weekend? Just this idea of just giving someone a couch and, you know, and just sharing what you have with other people. If you're fortunate to be lucky enough to have things that other people don't have, then you can hand that out. And I just want to add that we were saying, yeah, it's not all or nothing on our table as well. It can be a mixture according to what you need locally. But the final thing is that, like, from the perspective of gift of giving, if you look at what you do, your own health is when you give to somebody, your own health, all the research showing, improves. And so, you know, as we see that in France, health problems, depression, and it's enormous, enormous. It's very much, you know, lots of people not realise it, by giving you can improve your own health. And so if there is a way to somehow create that understanding that we can actually thrive and be happier in economies that support our health, but ones that are about giving, then that would be amazing.
So we'll come to... Okay.
And it's only just occurring to me this morning that the gift economy, you have to be careful not to make an obligation and expect things to be given back. And I think it's explained a bit to me why you can make things available and nobody takes you up on your offer. And it's because they realise the obligation of having to give something back. It's just something I noticed.
Thank you. So just going to ask Philippa and Juan for some closing reflections.
First of all, I want to answer you. You don't know Portuguese people partying. Otherwise, you would not ask me that. Wait for tonight. Of course we party. Of course we sing. We shout a little bit, though. No problem there. Everything is in order there. I think it's the only thing we have, in fact. I wanted to say something that was not talked here. But it comes to me very, very often as a question. And we had these several times. We had this thinking day of the peak money in London. That I as well did a short presentation of 5 minutes, and it was a little bit of brainstorming how UK should prepare or not to this kind of crisis. And I had really mountains of questions. And there was one that I think that is so important. I even start reflecting myself when I do my work or when I talk with other initiatives or the hubs. That is, we still have money. And then it connects to what you said, Claudia. That's why I don't really agree. I tell you why. It's not a conceptual thing. It's just I don't agree with this. When you still have certain conditions, money, you can switch your money to the right place where the structure should be to help you to lower the impact. And in the Thrive course we had with Mandy and Naresh, we had a little discussion about that. And one of the participants said, but where did you put the money fast? And I said, land. Because why not? The exercise is the opposite, and I was expecting that someone would come with this kind of stuff to create places where we think, now that we have the resources, let's invest on when we don't have such resources, what is important. Because my personal view is that re-economy makes sense if you integrate that. In my point of view. Real needs, so it connects with the real needs exactly there. If you don't have money, that is just a way of exchanging or replacing gift. I think the important thing is, what is your real need? And what is the structure to be sure that the need is met if you don't have the money? So... For me, this is key for the countries that are starting this process of rethinking how things will work if the crisis. For us, we, at least my initiative and my role as I see it, is to experiment and share what I have experimented. So I would advise other initiatives to do the same. And I would advise as well that we connect with each other and with countries with the experience of Brazil, for example, that has this incredible creativity connected with this, because the needs are the same. It's just they meet them in a different way. And in a way is that what I wanted to say is that whatever position you are, we need each other, we need to learn, to experiment, and to share.
Well, we are diverse, so, but we are not different, okay? We need to see this as a way of learning from each other. And I have to say that in Spain, even though I was saying, of course, that we have a huge crisis, all the bars have plenty of people drinking beer. That's one of the strangest things that happened in my place.
They sing as well, right?
Yeah, they sing. Well, we sing. We sing, we dance, we party a lot. So at least we have this, you know. Well, I just wanted to say that before, speaking about economy, the things that they were really valuable, they didn't have price. Now, it's like if value and price is totally different. The things that they don't have price, we don't put value to it. So we have to change this again, okay? And this value, it needs to go direct to the basic needs. Transition in everywhere, but in our places right now, needs to be based in projects that they can bring the basic needs for the people. And, that's all.
Thank you. So we're going to draw it to a close. And like with every time we have a Transition Network conference, there's always issues that are the live issues that are the edge of transition. And we don't aim to come up with any comprehensive answers, but we give, you know, have a discussion and explore them. And this has been a really, hopefully you found this a very useful and stimulating discussion. And I'm sure it's a discussion that will continue in blogs and whatever and so on. And thank you all for your time and for your input and for your discussion. And enjoy your lunch, and we'll see you later. Thank you very much.